You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. And here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Mino the Mayor here. Third hour coming your way. Todd, we need to update those temperatures because, like I said, I declared spring today wearing a short sleeve shirt for the first time since September. Also, because I've been lifting and working, I want to show off the guns.
25 across the board. Green Bay, Appleton, and Oshkosh. Yes.
So it still has to double to reach the projected
high. I think
it was
like at 3 o'clock, though. I think it's much later.
Yeah. Is it?
It's a later afternoon.
It is.
Yeah. I thought it would be like 45 this morning and stuff. And
three-way tie.
All right. By the way, okay, do we have our guest on?
We do. She's on the StreamYard with us.
Give us an introduction there, Todd.
Kate Stapleton's on with us this morning, and she is the director and producer of a documentary called The Inner Sea, and it's being premiered in Door County. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Kate. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Thank you. First of all, I hold people that do documentaries in the highest esteem possible. Because for one thing, I've actually tried doing one, and a lot of other people I know do them, and it's very time-consuming, and it takes a long time, and there's no guarantee you're going to get paid for doing it. Because
that is so, that's so true.
I mean, you want to talk about the... I remember I did this huge project one time where I literally slept at the TV station overnight where I was working at. I put in so many hours, it's mind-boggling. And the guy who got up then on the stage afterwards says, you know, I'm not sure who actually produced that, but it was excellent, and I'm sure it was a project of love. So thank you. And then, of love! You kidding me? I was sleeping on the floor under my desk. It was more than a project of love. How do I get paid? I never got paid. But what I'm saying is there's so much work that goes into these, and people literally have to do it from a place of love or whatever term you want to call it. Wouldn't you agree?
That's so true. I think that's true of every single person who's been involved in this project that we've done with the Inner Sea, with documentary films in general. Yeah, it's definitely, you're not there unless you love it. It's like farming. I feel like it's like dairy farming, right? Yep. Like you have to love it. Your odds of ever making a cent or breaking even are very low, but you know, you do it because you're passionate about it.
And that's why I say I have all the respect in the world for people like yourself, because I've seen it. I've been there. So congratulations.
I think that's cool that you're premiering it up in Door County because you are right along the coastline. But tell me, I read about it, but tell our listeners a little bit about the genesis of this film. It's not the happiest.
It's a pretty serious subject, yeah, but an important subject.
Yeah, I think I would hope that it's joyful. It's a story about a music documentary. It's also a love story, which it's appropriate that it's premiering on Valentine's Day weekend.
Oh, cool.
It's kind of an unconventional love story. It's a story about adoption, about a bright blue 40-foot school bus that my family's been driving around making music with, about a harp and a guitar, and the way that often beauty arrives when least expected. So that's kind of the basis.
The documentary on the Partridge Family? No, I'm just kidding.
Right? No. I mean, I think everyone in America kind of feels like at some point they might get into a school bus and drive around and make music. For some reason, that seems to be a fundamental part of the American dream.
That is awesome.
But we're actually doing it.
Well, we get musicians on here every Friday and feature something local. And musicians are dreamers, you know? And I think that's going to relate to some of these people to do what you did.
Right. So my husband and I play music together, and we've been playing songs about the Great Lakes for the past few years. And this summer we've been traveling around the shores of the Great Lakes. But it's also a story about the daughter that I placed for adoption, who's also a musician. So that's what the documentary is about.
And you've done some other documentaries, one regarding like the Mediterranean area.
Well, I might need to move from the Great Lakes to the Mediterranean, right?
Okay.
We wanted
Okay, never mind about that. But anyway, so, talk a little bit about the process of doing a documentary film.
And the step from wanting to do it to doing it. Like, what was it?
Step from that idea, sitting right here and saying, I want it, versus sitting in a theater and people are watching it.
Did you hit the lottery? How'd you finance this thing?
I financed a lot of it by baking bread, believe it or not.
That's an awesome backstory.
I was baking bread and cinnamon rolls at the farmer's market here in Pittsburgh because I realized if we were going to go on tour, you know, we would need to fund it just to go play music at the very beginning of when we started traveling to play music. My husband's a teacher. We have six kids, but I was baking bread and cinnamon rolls that were, I was actually inspired by the Amish community where I grew up, made these amazing maple cinnamon rolls. So
in Pennsylvania?
I grew up in Wisconsin, so these were Wisconsin Amish cinnamon rolls that I was inspired by, and people could not get enough of these cinnamon rolls that I was selling. So the bread and the cinnamon rolls was what kind of initially got us out there and funded the initial work. The guy, that's how we paid the cinematographer to come along with us and film the first parts of it. It was totally farmer's market cinnamon roll. Well,
that's fantastic.
And you had your built.
Ironically, that's a very organic way of funding your film.
Right. Very literally organic.
And you had your built-in sales force with the six kids. So that's all good.
That's true. Yeah. They were, my baby was face planting into the cinnamon roll. Just like, give me more.
Need that dough.
So have you've won an award, right?
I have not won an award yet. I'm just premiering this now. So I've been, my husband and I have been playing music for a while.
Right.
I've been a writer, I think a storyteller in a lot of different ways, but telling stories through film, this is the first time I've ever done it. And it really just came together. You know, my husband initially said, this is an amazing story. We're in the middle of an amazing story, and this is something, you're a storyteller. Let's dive into this. So we're just getting started. Bringing it, you know, to Door County is the first time that anyone's going to see it. So this will be the first time that the film has ever shown. And I think that's really appropriate because the story starts for me. I was raised in Wisconsin.
Which part, can we ask?
Sure. Yeah. Near La Crosse.
Okay.
So I was raised near La Crosse, but my dad is from Sheboygan. So not far down from where you guys are at all. The story kind of started for me on the edge of the lake in Sheboygan. That's where I sort of began the whole storytelling arc of this film. That's what I was thinking about was standing on the edge of the lake in Sheboygan, kind of being a young woman at 21 who had just placed a child for adoption. And I couldn't figure out how it was going to work and how I was going to survive it and what was going to happen. And it was really standing by the lake and looking out over the lake every night. And just looking at how, you know, vast it was and how beautiful it was that begins the story that is bringing me back to that same coast to premiere this film that tells the story of what happened along the inner sea.
Wow. So this is right from, I'm going to tell you, say from the heart. This is right from, not only from your heart, but from your soul, so to speak. I mean, this is you bearing it all, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I guess so.
I mean, that's quite a thing what you're talking about, being at a young age and those kind of decisions to make.
Yeah, it's a huge decision. And you make huge decisions when you're young and you have no idea how it's going to play out. So I think this film is really kind of tells the long story, the story arc of what happened with that story and how much music was born of it, how much love was born of it for a whole lot of different people who were involved.
So the name, The Inner Sea. That's because of the coastline. Tell me a little bit more about the name of the book.
The film.
The film, not the film.
It might be a book. There's a manuscript out there. So the film, I had been, whenever we play music, we think a lot about the stories behind it. And so for the past couple of years, we've been doing this project about, you know, thinking about the Great Lakes as seas and the ships that sail on them and the wooden ships that were sailing on them during the sailing era on the Great Lakes. So I was thinking a lot about the Great Lakes as inland seas, but then also thinking about, you know, my pregnancy when I was contemplating adoption, you know, when a child is in the womb, they're floating in an inner sea. So it was kind of a larger scale and a smaller scale concept that looped around.
Tell us a little bit about your musical careers.
So I play the harp. My husband plays the guitar, and he plays 12-string and 6-string guitar. And we play together, and we've been making music and traveling around looking for stories, telling stories for the past several years. And it's an unusual sound. I think you can't imagine it until you hear it. So if you're interested, let me know. We'll come play a show for you.
We'd love to do that. I'll give you credit for hauling that harp around. They're big. I know. People play banjo and some other things that you can just throw in the back of the car. You have to have a decent sized van.
Yeah, at minimum, like a minivan or a station wagon. But right. A school bus. Yeah, the school bus was like a harp is like another child. So we have six kids and a harp. You know, we need. Wow. That's how we ended up with a school bus. The harp I play is only it's about 5.5 feet tall. So it's not the concert harps you see in the orchestra. Those are really, really heavy. You need a piano mover for them. Right. But this one, I can carry up and down the stairs and, you know, get it on, call it onto the school bus.
But the question is, can your six kids carry it up and down the stairs?
Not yet. Probably my older ones.
Are they with you on the music scene?
Yeah. So we've done a lot of traveling during the summers because my husband's a teacher. But when we travel, we really always try to take our kids with us. So we've been able to take them, you know, all the way across America. We went to California a couple years ago and all the way back. We went to the West Coast of Oregon. And then a lot of, you know, traveling up into Upper Michigan, which is like another country. It's wild up there. I had never been there until I started to do these sea shanties of the Great Lakes and was like, where am I? Is it Lapland? Like Finland? This is crazy.
Where were you? Were you up in the copper country, as they call it, up around Houghton?
Yes, we went all the way around. We went all the way up to Copper Harbor. Yeah. And it's wild. We were doing a Edmund Fitzgerald, you know, singing about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which is kind of amazing on harp and guitar. And we were playing it one day way up on a mountain in the copper country. And the people we were with pointed out to the lake and were like, that the ship that had tried to rescue the Edmund Fitzgerald came across the horizon just as we were playing this song. Wow. As the dawn was breaking. It was wild.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's untapped territory up there for harp players.
It's just so hard to get to, right?
Yeah. How'd you like the food up there?
I like smoked trout. I'm the only one in my family who feels that way. So it's a polarizing. It was a polarizing experience.
Did you have a pasty? Trout.
I haven't had one yet. Okay. I see the signs and I just haven't gotten that far.
Well, you got to do. That's a little slice of heaven. There is a fresh pasty from a place up in the UP. From like a gas station that's part general store. The people live behind. They make the greatest pasties. You got to try that.
I will.
All right. This is really exciting. One more time. Tell us where and when it's going to be debuted.
All right. Door County Film Festival, February 15th. You can look up them up on Facebook, or they've got a website at doorcountyfilmfestival.com.
Outstanding.
Good luck to you. This sounds great.
Sounds fantastic.
Right.
We'd love to have you on again sometime. Talk more about this, okay?
We'll bring the harp.
Please do. Come on into our studio. Every Friday we do a live musical segment. Would love to have you guys here.
All right, we'll be back.
All right,
outstanding.
Cool.
Thank you so very much. This is really exciting. Kate Stapleton, director and producer of a documentary called The Inner Sea, Door County Film Festival. You got to check this one out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care, Kate. Quick break. Back after this. There'd be no truck drivers if it wasn't for us
trucks. Well, there he sits in that play, drinking coffee.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Songs about truck drivers many times told. How they pulled out of Pittsburgh for 6 days on the road. About the Feather River Canyon and climbing the...
All right, welcome back, everybody. Mino and the Mayor. We are shifting gears here. That was Door County. And, you know, those film festivals are awesome because you're seeing things, like she said, no one has seen this.
Yeah.
Go up there on the 15th, Valentine's Day weekend, and take in that film festival. There's other films there.
Yeah. Todd, could you go on that? Actually, I brought my computer and to print some stuff. Could you go on that Door County Film Festival? There were some really... it popped up in my... something on my phone. It's like, oh, there's some really interesting stuff.
There is.
On there. And then the Green Bay Film Festival is always great. I really want to go to some of those this year. I love those kind of movies. I love documentaries. I love those things. I told you that one time I hosted an event at, it was at St. Norbert, the Green Bay Film Festival used to be. And they had that one about the Samoan football players in Salt Lake City in Utah. Yeah, were all Mormon that. And mm-hmm. brought over to play football. But they had a struggle between... Do you want to be this great student and a great football player, or do you want to be a gang member, which was a very big part of their life? I mean, their dads had been their grandpas and So it's a room. It's like, great. I remember Mark Murphy was even there to see that one. But I want to find out some of the, I would love to see some of these documentaries at the film festivals coming up.
And the people who go to those things are very, very, I think they're high intellect and just, it's just, that's a cool vibe.
It's a cool venue.
Film festivals. It's a cool venue and you walk around and these films and you can't see them all, right? Because some are in this room, some are in that room, and some of them are done by high school kids and other ones are done by... But I was surprised, like you mentioned Mark, but there's a lot of people that you know that really enjoy that and they want to come out and see something new. It's just you're not going to see that anywhere else.
And the two favorite documentaries I've ever seen in my entire life, and I was talking to our guest there about, you know, the thing is with a documentary, you might put in all that work for years and years and years and not make a dime. And this lady, this young woman from Houghton, Michigan, she did this documentary on these kids, these young guys from Hancock, Michigan, up in the copper country. And to pay for college, they all joined the National Guard. Thinking, okay, great. Hey, we're all going to go to Michigan Tech or Northern or Gogebic or wherever, and it's going to be paid for. Not knowing they're going to be sent into the badlands of Afghanistan,
first,
clearing roads, basically driving out, waiting for a mine to hit them, you know, and whatever. Yeah. And she went over there. She went on missions with them in Afghanistan, in the mountains, all this stuff, and came back and produced an amazing documentary, and it's called Where Soldiers Come From. And if you guys get a chance, anybody out there, if you get a chance to look that one up, Where Soldiers Come From is truly an amazing documentary. And the other one, if you want to call it a documentary, is our good friend Brian Eich, Father, Soldier, Son. Is just a tremendous story about Brian and his son and the tragedy that occurred. So those are just two documentaries I've got off the top of my head that are truly fantastic.
And this Inner Sea, I asked her if she won an award, and she goes, no, we haven't won anything. Well, it's an official selection. She had to do something to get into the festival.
Right?
I mean, there's a million films that people would like to get in. And like I said, there's high school kids, college kids that put together films, so I'm... she must have done something right to become an official selection. So that's gonna be interesting stuff.
Very cool.
For seeing that,
so. Always fun. I still got it in me. I want to do a documentary.
What are you gonna do it on?
A veterans type thing. Yep. A military type thing. I mean, you got to go with what you know. You know, and there's nothing more that can be done or said about the Packers. I mean, there just isn't.
I would like to do my kids like do The Office, but in City Hall. You know,
the TV show The Office.
Yep, a little bit more. Comical characters. Documentaries, they're so serious, right? Or they're not that funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I'd do a documentary. I can't think of anything I would do. But I'm waiting for these guys to call us back about getting in these films. You know, we just had this guy on this week, right? Yeah. Like he's doing another film. And
yeah, I don't mind. No.
I haven't got a call from him yet, but... Anyway.
Well, because the films you are in, you don't even sit and watch.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That is a good point. That you do have, that is.
Dude's been in films and he doesn't even watch
them. That actually is a really good point.
And we were just talking about this film that my son-in-law took me to. The lady drives around in a van and goes to Amazon and has a campfire.
Yeah,
one
of the few times
she goes to the bathroom in a bucket.
I know. Yeah. That's where I turn it off.
Okay, so she's in this van.
That's where I turn it off.
And I'm like, okay, so we got to go see this movie. And of course, my kids, they're all smarter than me.
Yeah.
And so we got to go to this dad. So I went. I said, Donna, I'm leaving. I'll just meet you in the car, you know, because we only brought one car, which was mistake number one.
Well, you know what was weird about that movie, though, too? And again, I've always said one of my dreams is to drive around the country and sleep in a van.
I just want to say that. So I complained about it all the way home and, of course, at dinner and then probably the next day as well. And then...
Can't imagine.
And then,
can't imagine him complaining about it.
And then, like, I don't know, 2 months later, 3 months, she says, Jim, that movie you didn't like? It won, four
Francine
awards.
Francine McDermott, I think, is her name. She's been in unbelievable movie. She was the main character in Fargo. That was her first big main character, the main character in Fargo.
Well, that one had a little more of a storyline to it. This driving around in a van.
That's your accomplice in the wood chipper, I presume?
Yeah, that was a little better.
Yeah.
Anyway, these documentaries are
everybody
great.
Needs a 6 cent stamp.
Right.
Oh, I don't know. I only came in second place there. No, Ron. They need 6 cent stamps. When the price goes up, that's what you got to use.
Yeah.
You really think so, Margie? You betcha.
Yeah.
This is my Fargo impersonation.
There you go. That's not bad.
That was not bad.
No.
My buddy Rich could do it.
That story was, that movie was.
But that movie was terrible. And again, it went off. But here's the thing. What? No, the one about her driving around to the van.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was.
Totally.
It was terrible.
It was.
Oh, Fargo was phenomenal. I've seen that 20 times.
Right.
But was weird. It was uncomfortable because you know she's a big-time actress. She's won Oscars. Huge. So there she is as this actress. It's not Francine, whatever her name is, driving around in a van saying, I'm going to try this for a year and get back to my inner self, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Okay? She was an actress. And then she worked, I remember, at a Walmart warehouse.
Amazon.
Like, I don't know, or Amazon. Yeah, I'm sorry. Amazon warehouse. And it's like, you could tell that was they weren't actors. They were real Amazon workers.
Oh, yeah.
Who were just like normal people. Whereas if you were shooting a documentary, that's the way they would be.
You couldn't see her as who she was playing?
Well, what I'm saying is, here's this famous actress, and then she's in with a bunch of people who are regular warehouse workers.
It's tough to try and...
What's that fourth wall they call it or something?
Yeah. The movie Nomadland? Is
yes,
that what it was?
That's what it is.
Nomadland?
That's bringing back bad flashes, bad memories. That was... And that. How long is that movie? 4 hours and what?
I don't know.
It's regular length.
I mean, 1 hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, the part where she had... The lady was like, well, you got Nomadland, this five-gallon bucket, and that's your bathroom.
Right.
No. Yeah, I'm going to be at truck stops the whole time when I travel
interesting
like that.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
That could work.
I love truck stops.
But actually, that movie, this thing's going to be great. I'm really like this inner sea, the family in the van. And I really think that backstory of how she raised the money of selling, you know, at a bakery, farmers markets,
awesome.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Right,
that's
I'm going.
Cool. All right. We got to send her a quick break. We come back. Pat Tracy, discovering Oshkosh. Look at Lisa Hale sitting, keeping the chair warm, making sure the mic's all set to go. Hi, Lisa.
All right.
Nice to see you. Mind of the Mayor back after this.
Jimmy hauling hogs. We is heading for Bear on I-10, about a mile out of Shaky Town. I says, Pigpen, this here's a rubber.
For WGBW and WISS News, I'm Lisa Hale. The memo to stop all federal funding to states may have been rescinded, but the governors are not standing down. Melissa Kay reports.
Governor Tony Evers released a statement Wednesday afternoon addressing the Trump administration's continued efforts to withhold Wisconsin's already approved federal funds. While the Trump administration announced they are rescinding the memo issued on Monday, they are continuing to move forward with implementing the policy. Governor Evers stated, quote, "If Wisconsin's federal funding continues to be threatened, delayed, and obstructed, make no mistake, I will continue using every power available to me to fight against those efforts to ensure Wisconsin's kids, families, law enforcement, veterans, seniors, and so many others can continue to access the resources, services, and programs they depend on." End quote. The governor urges Washington to abandon this failed policy and focus on priorities that will actually help Wisconsinites. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
A 34-year-old Green Bay man was arrested Wednesday in connection to a stabbing that is being investigated as a homicide. As we reported yesterday afternoon, Green Bay police say a 60-year-old Green Bay man was killed in the 1500 block of Capitol Drive Tuesday night. Police located a person of interest Wednesday afternoon walking around West Mason and 12th Avenue and took him into custody. The name of the victim is being withheld for now. A power outage that affected about 245 We Energy's customers Tuesday morning caused the Appleton City Hall starting at about 11:30 and for the rest of the day. All Appleton City services from the phone lines to the finance window were closed. We Energy's outage map said the problem was caused by an underground cable. Power was restored late afternoon. I'm Lisa Hale for WGBW and WISS News. For news anytime, visit civicmedia.us.
Take Mino and the Mayor with you anywhere. Download the Civic Media app today from the Apple Store or Google Play Store and text the studio directly, all from the Civic Media app. Download it today. Now, once again, here's Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here on a Thursday morning, downtown Green Bay, downtown Oshkosh, downtown Appleton. And, of course, the Civic Media app along with 1590 AM and 1100 AM time for our veteran salute brought to you by the Olson Legal Group. Purple Heart, Iraq veteran, Mr. Olson, just a great guy. Great to have him aboard for this. And now, very proud and honored to have a good friend of mine and one of my most esteemed Vietnam veterans joining us. And, Rich, I was told, I got to be honest with you, I was told by a good friend of ours, Chuck Wellens, okay?
Right.
You being a fellow Marine like him, to talk slow and not use any really big words.
Or bad words.
Yeah. So
Just, fallen Marines. You know, what are you going
to
do?
Right. What are you going to do? Hey, Rich, welcome aboard. It's so great to talk to you. First of all, we want to thank you. I know it sounds cheesy, but you went about 50 years without anybody saying thank you for your service in the United States Marines and in Vietnam. So we just want to reiterate that, buddy. Thank you for your service and what you did in Vietnam.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you guys for doing what you do for veterans.
It's our pleasure, buddy. One thing I, you know, so many of the veterans I talk to, and like two guys I'm working on their story right now, you know, they were drafted and got thrown in and whatever, weren't really mentally prepared for what they faced. You were the opposite. You had it in your mind. You wanted to join the Marines. And if you got sent to Vietnam, you were fine with it. You went in with a different mindset than a lot of people in that area, 67, 68, that era. Right, Rich?
Right. Yep. I always, you know, as I was younger, I always thought that'd be in the service. I didn't know I was going to be a Marine, but I thought about the Marines, and that's where I ended up.
Was your dad in the Marines? You got some family lineage?
No, no. I was the only one in my family.
I'm interested in that. You were a kid. You're going to be in the service. And, like, we've had other people on here, and some of them wanted to go, some didn't. That some that wanted to go, I'm always interested in what made you attracted to the service? Movies, girls, what?
He is big into girls. He was.
Yeah. Lucky.
Damn right.
Yeah, right, John?
Yeah. Rich married a 10.
Right.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was only a 5. I don't understand it.
I know, right? On a good day, you're a 5.
Marry up.
In your dress blues, you're a 7.
Yeah, right.
But you knew you were going to go to Vietnam, Rich, and you were okay with that.
Right. Well, you know, when I joined the Marine Corps, that was back in 68, so I was pretty proud of that. But I didn't want to be on a boat, so that's one reason why I joined the Marine Corps. Then I found out that they're on the boat. I'm like, oh, no.
That's funny.
So, but I lucked out in that sense because I didn't want to be on no boat.
You know, it's amazing, though, Rich, and all the guys I've interviewed, you know, several hundred of them, I've never met one, maybe in World War II this happened, or Korea, but I never met one in Vietnam that literally was flown right into a battle, where your first experience in Vietnam was being flown into a battle. And that happened to you on your very first day, didn't it?
Right. They were getting ambushed, and I flew right in there and got dropped off and got met up with my fire team, and that's where I stayed till I got wounded. And the funny thing about that is that I never even remember when I got wounded. It was late in November.
Can you explain that, Rich? What happened to you when you got wounded? I mean, obviously I know, but go ahead and tell that story if you don't mind.
We were out on a patrol, platoon-sized patrol, actually. And I was, at that time, I was the squad leader. My friend had just got wounded the day before. There was quite a few that got wounded the day before. And I took over the squad, which I really didn't want to because I walked point the whole time I was there. But I decided that, I'll do the squad thing. And I was telling our fire teams, which would be on our right and our left, as our patrol went, I was telling them what to do and the hooches and stuff to check them. And if there was nobody in them, to frag them and things like that. And I was going along and all, I felt the tug. And I turned around to tell my partner, I thought I tripped, and that's all the words I got out. And the next thing you know, I'm in the air, and wow. My M16 flying out in front of me on the right side, and I can still see it today. And did a little turn in the air and hit the ground, and that's where I laid till the corpsman came up there.
So you hit a booby trap, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you survive that, Rich? Not many guys, and I'm not kidding this when I say not many guys walk away from that, and you didn't in that, but a lot of guys lose their legs to that exact same type of booby trap. How did you, I mean, we've played fast pitch softball together. How did you survive something like that?
I guess it was God's will, because I don't know. I know I got hit everywhere except in my head. So I just don't know. Lucky, I think my M16 protected my arm from getting blown off. Because actually, you know, I could, it was out in front of me in the air. So yeah, it probably saved my arm.
Wow, that is unbelievable trauma.
Yeah.
Do you have, you don't have to tell me if you don't want to, but do you think about it a lot? Do you have bad dreams about it? I mean, that is like...
Can we talk about that, Rich, huh?
Yeah. It's still there.
Yeah.
It'll never go away. You know, we're getting older. We're probably not. Our minds aren't sharp, but every day something comes up that reminds you of war and getting hurt. And you never really, at the time, when you get wounded, you don't really deal with the trauma. It's just everything is fast. There's no time. There's no time to feel sorry for yourself. There's right. no time. When somebody dies next to you or in your arms, there's no time to feel sorry for them. That's all gone. Later in your life, then you start thinking about, man, you know, when somebody dies now, you grieve and the sorrow's there. But then there was no sorrow. It was just put them on a chopper and send them home, you know.
Well, talk, Rector, if you don't mind, I mean, you said something about that, and a lot of people say this, you know, the phrase, somebody died in their arms, but you literally had that happen with that young kid, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, we were on a company patrol that night, and we were going down a dike, and we made a turn, and like a little turn in the dike, and the next thing I know, there was a shot fired from, I don't know exactly where. But the kid in front of me dropped right into the rice paddy, and I jumped down there with him, and I could tell that he was gasping for air. I don't want to get graphic, but I got a hold of him, and we tried to do a trach on him, but he didn't make it. So he died in my arms. Yeah, it was very sad. And I think now, you know, the poor parents, they have no clue, you know, their kid, you know. Very sad.
And you guys were, I mean, you guys were in a lot of contact, Rich, and you got a high medal. I mean, you got a V for Valor, a Bronze Bar with a V for Valor. They don't hand those out for anything. But the amazing thing, and I've talked to other vets that have been, you know, decorated, and they read the citation, they're like, who are you writing about? I don't recognize anything in this report. But when you're in the heat of the battle, that's what it is, huh, Rich?
Yeah, it's. I just found out recently that in that particular instance that my sergeant was shot dead right by me, and we dragged him back over the dike. And behind me, I didn't realize it, that five other guys were wounded at the same time. And of course, you knew that day that helicopter was shot down in front of us, and That was quite a day, but there's more to that story too. But I don't really go there.
Yeah.
I mean,
Well, Rich, you know, like Johnny said, you know, it's taken this country 50 years to come around. But have you been out to D.C. to look at that memorial for you?
No, I haven't done that trip, and everybody asked me why. I was committed to taking care of my wife for a long time. She was sick, so
right, that's more important.
I didn't really. That wasn't important to me. Now I'm getting older. I have a friend of mine who was in Vietnam with me, Terry Quick. He wants me to hook up with him this summer and go and see all them sites.
You should do that. It's quite an honor, and it's for you, it's different than the rest of us. And you see your name or the names of people that you may know that that died in your
Well, one of the guys that you went to school with, David DeLangelo, right?
Right, exactly. Sad.
Very
homeboy.
Yep, hometown Nagani boy. Killed on his way home from Vietnam.
Yeah.
Worst story ever.
Well, his airplane collided with a
Chinook
helicopter.
Yeah. On the way home.
Right.
Yep.
I think right in Vietnam.
Hey, Rich, another thing, though, that I think is so heartbreaking, I really mean this. So you get wounded badly. Otherwise, I just tell the funny. I'm going to tell the story because I'm not, I don't have confidence that you wouldn't swear. I'm just being honest. I know you. So they get him on the chopper, the medevac, okay, Rich? He's bleeding all over, and they thought this was it. That's the last time. And they're like, buddy, hang in there, brother. We love you. Hang in there, man. God bless you, Rich. Hang in there, buddy. And all of a sudden, he pops up. Just they thought he was like dead. He pops and goes, "Hey, Doc, can I have another shot of that bleep?" The morphine.
That wasn't the words I used.
No, I bet not. Wow.
I didn't tell you the whole story when I was laying on the ground and the chopper was flying overhead, and my lieutenant was telling me that I was bitching at him, saying, "Hey, get that damn thing down here. I'm bleeding to death, you know." And he said, "Just relax, older." And well, that's not the words I used on him.
Wow.
Yeah. So I got him squared away.
I'll bet you did. Well, I like your buddy Terry when I interviewed him. And he says, you know, they always say a good Marine, one thing a good Marine, I'm getting this wrong, Rich, but it's quoted in the book. Somebody, a good Marine really, can I use the word B-I-T-C-H? A good Marine bitches about everything. From the moment Rich Carkey touched the ground of Vietnam, I knew he was going to be a good Marine because he bitched about everything that was going on.
Funny.
Yeah, that's Terry, all right.
Hey, Rich.
Oh, yeah.
We got to set it to a quick break. Can you stick around for 1 minute? I wanted to, when we come back, I want to talk about you being at the hospital in Chicago, at Great Lakes, and you had to get out of there, and you're still completely wounded, and you standing out there in the bitter cold trying to hitchhike in your Marine uniform in 1969 outside of Chicago. I want you to tell that story when we come back, okay?
All right. All right. Awesome.
Thank you, buddy. Rich Carkey, our veteran salute, brought to you by Olson Legal Group. Back right after this.
The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done?
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, welcome back. Mino the Mayor here, 97.9 FM WGBW, 98.3 and 96.5 FM WISS in Oshkosh and Appleton with Rich Carkey for our veteran salute, brought to you by Nate Olson, Olson Legal Group. A veteran-owned business in Oshkosh and Berlin. Now, Rich, obviously you got severely wounded. You went through all the hospitals over there, made it to Great Lakes Hospital in Chicago, and you had just kind of had enough. You just needed to get away, and you wanted to get back home. Tell people what you did to try to get back home up to the UP.
No, I didn't really have much choice, because at that time they sent me in front of a board, and they told me I'd have to leave the Marine Corps. So on that day, I went and got my dress greens on and my little hat, no boots, no coat. And I hitchhiked out to the highway, and I hitchhiked to Milwaukee. And this guy came by in the van. He picked me up and said, "What are you doing out here, dude? People don't like you around here." And I said, "I don't care. I'm going home." Well, he brought me to Milwaukee, but he wouldn't leave me on the south side of Milwaukee. So he drove me right through and dropped me off and gave me a quilt out of his van. And he told me good luck. And from that point on, I don't remember really what happened. I got to Iron Mountain. I know I went home from there, but that's all I remember.
Can you picture yourself standing out there? You probably weighed about 140 pounds after being in the hospital and everything, and out there freezing, trying to hitchhike.
Yeah, I couldn't use my right arm to hitchhike. I had to use my left arm. I slipped my thumb up. But I made it.
you made it, buddy. Okay, and I got to ask you. By the way, I got a text here. This is from one of our listeners. Endless gratitude and admiration for you, Rich. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Continued blessings. Somebody just texted that in.
Thanks, Sam, very much. Appreciate that. But you know what, John, and you know me. Yeah. I'm really just another guy. I'm just another soldier. I'm not, you know, I just did what I thought was right as a kid. I believed in my country. So that's why I went in the Marine Corps, actually. I thought that was the thing to do.
How many years did it take you to kind of calm down, whatever, if in fact you are?
I don't know. I don't know if you'll ever get to that point where, you know, it's always going to be there.
Yeah.
But guys used to trigger you at times too, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. You know, even World War II veterans, they had comments to make to us. And that didn't go over good. You know, sometimes it got ugly, you know, but I was proud to be what I did. I was proud to be a Marine. I was a good soldier. I did what I was supposed to do. Right. So
actually,
I have no regret.
One of the most disappointing days was the one you just talked about. You were devastated that they told you couldn't be in the Marines anymore. You wanted to stay there for life, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. What happened when I got to Chicago, it's kind of weird, but, you know, I was at the hospital and they sent my gear down to there was a brig there in Chicago and they sent me there. They were going to make me work there. And I was escorting a prisoner up to the hospital one day. And this big dude, I told him, I said, hey, dude, if you want to go, just go. I'm not going to stop you. Well, when I got to the hospital, the doctor seen me, he said, no, go get your gear. You're done. So, I mean, yeah,
that
was another story.
That's a tough day for you, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So what are you doing now? Are you networking with some of your friends? I mean, some of them are getting a little bit older, but do you have an organization you go to on a monthly, weekly basis?
I used to do that with a group. A lot of those guys are dead and gone now. They're, you know, it's that time in our life. We're getting older. And I've been pretty much myself. Yeah.
You've got an incredible family, incredibly successful. His son was one of the best football players ever to come out of Nagani. I mean, he was D1 material. But your wife, well, I mean, talk about, you know, somebody, are they going straight to heaven? I mean, she could go straight to sainthood for the way she supported you in your life. And you, vice versa, the way you supported her once she became sick. I mean, you guys had a real, real special relationship, didn't you, Rich?
Yeah, I was a very lucky guy. Beautiful person on the inside and outside. And just made, I think, you know, probably the reason I survived. I mean, let's be honest. She knew me inside and out, and she knew when things weren't good, but she loved me. You know, I loved her. There was times when she asked me why I wouldn't put her in a nursing home. I said, never. I said, I love you too much. I never would do that to her. So now you're getting me emotional now.
Sorry there, buddy. But I just want to point that out. I was telling Jim during a breaker, I've never seen one man treat their wife with more care, concern, and love than you did with Karen all the way through. No lie. And the thing, one thing we didn't talk about too, when and I'm not going to get into this running out of time, when Jim mentioned you ever have nightmares, Karen told me about after you would leave for work, she'd have to vacuum your pillowcase because all the hair that fell out during the night from your dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was losing my hair and not sleeping, and it was a rough go, but I got through it. I mean, I just decided I had to get out and get busy in life, and that's what I did.
And one of the other great blessings you got is he made me your catcher on your softball team.
Yeah, I know why you guys, and I know why you like to catch too, because I shouldn't even go there. I'm not going to go there.
Well, enjoy your trip to D.C. I hope you do that. That's going to be great.
Yeah, we're going to do that, Rich. I'm getting together with a bunch of your buddies, Marine buddies today, and Chuck and the whole gang, and we're going to come up there. We're just going to kidnap you one day, just so you know that.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
You got it, my brother. Rich Carkey.
I'm coming down.
You better. Rich Carkey, United States Marine Corps veteran. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, my brother.
Thank you, guys.
You're the
best. Appreciate everything you've done for the veterans.
Love you, my man.
Love you.
Take care. We're going to set a quick break. Mine on the Mayor back after this.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.